probably the only time I'll drink out of that stand. But I see everybody always coming up with something to drink, so yeah, and it looked like I had someone too. My name is Amy, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm highly distractible, so we'll just have to get all of it out of the way. First, I'd like to say thank you for welcoming me up here, and it is definitely an honor to come and speak to anybody that will listen. I used to have people, you know, listen to me, but I paid them, so it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a change. So I am from Richmond. Well, for the past 3 or 4 years, I've been from Richmond. And my home group is Jaywalkers Group. We meet Tuesday at 7:30, and then we meet Friday nights at 7. We have a beginners meeting, and then we meet at 8 o'clock for open big book, or closed big book meeting. So, if you're ever in Richmond, come on, join us. Let's see. Okay, I'm done. No, okay. Just kidding. It's probably only had about 5 minutes. Okay. I always knew I was different, even before I started drinking. I used to, I started drinking probably on my own will when I was 8 years old. And I can even remember before that telling my parents that I was different. And, I used to tell them I was adopted and stuff, and which my mother would say, no, you're not, because I was a difficult child. From the beginning, came out crying, haven't stopped. And I can just always remember, you know, we moved around a lot. My father was in the military. My mother was a housewife for a long time. So I was like sixth grade. So we moved around a lot. And I always played that different role. You know, I'm the new kid in school. I could play any role I wanted. If I messed up at one school, I knew 6 months to a year we were going to move so I could be a whole new person. And which went great with the whole actress persona that I wanted to always be. And so I started drinking when I was 8. And my father, it was me and my father, and he was big into football games and drinking beer and stuff, and I went and got a beer for him, and got a couple, because that's the way he drank too. And so then he let me have one, and I remember it was halftime, and then I don't remember much after that. Oh, to be young and a lightweight. we just kept on drinking. Every football game, then baseball came, and basketball, and any other, and those baseball, basketball games, they got quite a few during the week. So those were fun. I kept on drinking. My mother started me drinking on wine at dinner, and, she's from Italy, and my father's from Germany, so it's a great beer, wine, liquor combination. So I drank everything under the sun. I didn't discriminate between beer and wine or liquor. If it was there, I would drink it. I didn't have a favorite drink. If it got me drunk, then that was my favorite. I wasn't picky about it. I couldn't really stand beer a lot. But, after the first few shots of liquor, beer was okay. And so I could handle. So I drank quite a bit, and had many experiences, drinking and having that thought of, is this it? Because when you're 12, it's not the easiest to get alcohol and stuff. Although we did start stealing, so that was a good trade I picked up, and would steal liquor bottles and me and my friends, we would get money. This is always a fun pastime. We would get money and stand outside the little, mini mart thing or something and, beg, older people that were going in that looked like he'd buy something. And tell them, hey, look, we have money. We'll buy you something if you buy us alcohol and stuff. And so we got a lot of alcohol that way. And because all I can remember is You know, and even to this day, I'm not very good at, like, the size of them. I just knew small bottle, big bottle, nice bottle. You know? Like, the fifth, liter, I don't know. It was alcohol, that's all I knew. And because all I knew about it is once I started drinking it, I feel good. Let me show you what I can do now. Because I was actually a very shy person. And I think the cross between moving a lot and having to be an outgoing person, so you wouldn't be listed as the loner kid. And alcohol definitely helped. I became a very outwardly person. Probably not all in the right ways, but whatever. So, again, continued drinking through high school. High school, it pretty much became a, I don't know, 5 days a week thing or something. I don't know. And, and during the day that a few times, because I was in senior class, and we had this class that was, like, our high school was in Newport News. That's where I went to high school, by the way. It was in Newport News. And we had this other class that we had to take in Hampton, which is, like, 20 minutes away. So between our Hampton class in the mornings to get to high school in Newport News, you know, we would drink from there. And so I guess it was 11:30, so technically it was a morning drink. But we thought that was okay. Because my whole theory, I had a lot of theories when I was drinking. And my whole theory about drinking was, I'm thirsty, and it's liquid, so why not drink? I don't understand. And I tried to prove this point to a counselor once, and I even told her, I was like, look, you have water, and you have liquor. I like the taste of liquor. Water's okay. Liquor makes me feel good. Water doesn't do anything. I get, I keep drinking, and eventually I'll not be so thirsty. And water is just didn't do anything for me. So if they're both liquids, why couldn't I drink the liquor? You had to be there in my mind. Okay. It worked for me. And so I drank, alcohol. I had a lot of my physical consequences in high school when I was young. And then I had a lot of my emotional and spiritual consequences when I got older. And, I think it's a lot like the program. It's not so much the physical consequences that got me sober, and it's not the physical sobriety that keeps me sober. In order to stay sober, I have to work a spiritual and emotional program. And that's what brought me into the program also, was being spiritually and emotionally drained and broken. Which is somebody told me that broken word, and I was like, they just fit, So my physical consequences listed. We'll go by this quick because they're not fun, and you probably have heard them before. So, by 14, I was in juvie jail. By high school, I was in a little meeting thing that we met every Friday, which was cool because I didn't like school anyways. And so it took me out of class for an hour and a half. And we sat in this little room, drank Sprite, ate animal crackers, and talked about alcohol. Some resemblance of AA, but I didn't pay attention to it. So by 16, I had gotten shot. So they said, hey, you need to get AA. So I went to my first AA meeting when I was 16. And no offense if you're over 40. But I was 16, and I was sitting in this meeting, and this really old guy was talking up there. And he was like, and now that I'm 40 years old, and I was like, oh, man. So, I had nothing to do with him because I thought I couldn't relate to that at all. You don't understand. I'm 16 years old. Things are going crappy for me, but when I drink, things are great. And that's what I still believe. I mean, yeah, I had some consequences, but, it's part of life, right? Although I caused them, but, it wasn't the point because I wouldn't admit that then. So by 17, I was in a coma from alcohol and some other stuff. And by 17, I had also been kicked out of the house because my parents just couldn't hang with me anymore. And I guess I put them through enough crap. And moved out into an apartment with my brother, which, for the next 2 years, I really couldn't tell you much about him. And I went to school for a little bit. And I know I was a paramedic firefighter then, and I remember that I showed up to work a few times. And but, you know, we just drank the whole time. We, you know, there was always alcohol, and I didn't care. It didn't even have to be cold. I drank it warm. It didn't matter to me. If it was sitting out, oh, look, beer, let me go get some of that. You know? I'm like, I don't know whose it is, but hey, can I, yeah, I got some of that, you know? And so I was just pretty much drunk the whole time. So, you know, I finally went off to college again. And which is a very big point in my story. I'm always in college, and oh look, I'm still in college. And so I went off to college again, and because my brother motivated me to do something with my life, and I looked up to my brother. You know, like I said, we moved around a lot, and my brother was always there, so I looked up to him. So I have this instinct about me. This quality that I love about me so much that, you know, if you ask my sponsor, it's a different question. But I think I am so determined and so driven that I will get whatever I want eventually. My sponsor calls it stubbornness and hard-headed. But it's all, again, it's all about how you look at it. Stay in my head and you'll be, yeah. It was crazy up here. So I finally got into the college I wanted, did the program, and, you know, did the whole college deal thing, and was drunk all the time, experienced with a lot of stuff, just did all kinds of bad stuff, you know. And not only was I a bad kid just drinking, I was a bad kid and just, I just liked trouble, okay? You know, I'd set stuff on fire in high school in the, you know, bathroom. I was just like a bad kid, you know, because I thought I was different. And so it just lasted until, you know, so, well, I was a year and a half sober. Because, you know, I wouldn't say I was real spiritual when I was a year sober. Took me a while. Sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly. I'm on that slow path. So it finally got to college where I had to do an internship. I had to do two internships. And one of my internships, well, I didn't make it to the second internship on the first try. I did this first internship, and it was in Richmond at a camp. And, you know, I don't know, this was definitely God talking and working through me. Because what alcoholic would pick a camp setting out of all, you know, hospitals, community places? I pick a camp where it is alcohol-free during the week. What was I thinking? So I went to this camp, and I lasted a week. And, I don't know, something about we weren't supposed to, you know, my car broke down, so they're like, oh, great, her car broke down, now she won't go because camp's like a mile away from the nearest restaurant or whatever. Yeah, I walked that night, like a mile to this restaurant, it's like 10 o'clock at night, you know, I'm walking, coming back drunk and stuff, so, I don't know, long story about, you know, getting drunk, and which is nothing new to us. And, so, I got kicked out. They kicked me out and, you know, fired me or whatever, and said, you know, and it, you know, it was definitely I was in the wrong because they, you know, growing up and through my experiences, I had a lot of people that truly did care and want to help me out. I was just so alcoholic that, okay, you're ruining my life, so back off. Get out of my life. And I just pushed everybody out. You know, she, you know, my boss was even like, you know, if you just stay here, we'll help you find, you know, we'll call places or take you to Tucker's. And I was like, whatever. So the next day I was so pissed, you know, obviously. So I went out and drank. And they found me in the parking lot at Applebee's in my car, passed out. So I ended up and woke up at Tucker's for the first time. And I didn't get sober right there. Stay in Tucker's for a little bit and listen to what they had to say. I was a psycho. I was crazy. And I did puzzles all day, little jigsaw puzzles, stayed in my little corner. And it was like paranoid, like, who's looking, you know? And it was one of my better moments there. And so I finally got out, and they were like, oh, you need to go to meetings, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't have anywhere to live. My car's broke down. I don't know anybody in Richmond. I'm getting kicked out of school. wife wasn't looking that bad just yet. So, all right, fine, I'll go to a meeting. Well, yeah, so I go to this meeting, meet this lady who, you know, eventually I asked her to sponsor me, and it was funny because she's like, so where do you live? Can I drop you off somewhere? I was like, oh, I live in the West End. That's where the meeting was. The West End. Just drop me off right here. I'll walk. I like walking and stuff. Because, you know, I didn't have a place to live, so, you know, how do you explain, well, drop me off at this house, but you keep going, I'm just going to wait, you know? I'm sure they'll let me in for a second, you know. So, but she's smart, and she realized, you know. So, got a little help there, and went to AA meetings, and really thought that, you know, I'm surrounded by AA people, I'm really, you know, trying this, I think this is really what's going on. But right back here is saying, what if? Maybe I just got into the wrong crowd. I was at camp, they were all sober, so I don't know where the wrong crowd came. But, you know, maybe this isn't it. You know, I'm still young, I'm only 22 years old, you know. Maybe this isn't right. So I tried to stay sober, I went back to college because they hadn't kicked me out yet. And I was doing pretty good. Started going to meetings one week. And I thought that's what you're supposed to do. You know, hey, I'm sober. Look at me, you know. And the whole time, a friend of mine who wouldn't drink around me, and some good friend or something, we'd go on walks at night, and I'd walk by the bar, and the whole time looking this way. And we're walking. And she's like, come on, let's go. And I'm like, okay. You know, so obviously not ready to stop drinking here. And some things went on. I went to my first, my friend's not here that loves this story, but not the end of the story, but the whole purpose of the story. Okay, so I got this cat, this little kitten, because I felt that I am 68 days sober. I am ready to take care of a, you know, a little baby cat because I am mature. I'm in college. Okay? So, I'm taking care of this. I got this little kitten on a Friday. No, Saturday. And, just to let you know, it wasn't my fault. The vet said so. The cat was already sick. But apparently, I had left that next Friday in the morning and went to classes and went and, I don't know, forgot about the cat probably. I don't know. So, I came back like 8 hours later and the cat wasn't doing well. And so, I took him to the vet. Well, that weekend I was supposed to go to a AA conference. It was my very first one. And the cat didn't make it. And so, but in the sick brain that I have, my worst thing thought was, I wasted a perfectly good name on this cat. And I can't use it again. I'm a little sick. In case you're wondering, name was Willis. And I went to, and my friends were really good in high school. I don't know why, you know, well, I do. I'm an alcoholic, pushed them away. But they drove me all the way down from Farmville, I went to Longwood College, all the way down to Hampton to go to this conference because they knew my sobriety was important because they knew how I drank. I just didn't quite see it. So another little interesting story here. Went to this meeting and relapsed. I was in a conference, and this is what I like to think about when I think about my life drunk, is that it doesn't matter to me where I am, what I'm doing, because if I know I'm done and I'm ready to be done, then I'm done. Because I was surrounded by friends that were not drinking around me. I went to an AA conference and was surrounded by all these AA people. I mean, I was in a hotel room with women that had like 10 years of sobriety and are very active in the program. You know, it's just all this. And I couldn't hang. So I went out Saturday night and got drunk and came back to the hotel because I needed a place to stay. And passed out in the bed like they wouldn't know that I'm all red-faced and I'm good. You know? And because that delusion sets in that you don't know. So I went back out and started drinking a little bit. And I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm good. After telling my sponsor that I was sharing a bed with that night. So I'm sure she knew I was drunk. you know, whole drank and all this. So I went back to the college and would come back and, you know, constant relapser, came back. And I got to pick up another white chip. I have a lot of white chips, so if we need to play poker later, I got them. And so, you know, just had difficulties coming back in the program. And went to a hearing at school, so I did get placed back. And this is, I think, this was even on my inventory, another sick moment. This was on my inventory that I had so many people in my life that enabled me, that it made me mad. Because if they had just been mean to me, then maybe I would have gotten sober earlier. You know, once again, blaming them and not me. And but my professor at the hearing says, we don't have a problem if she comes back to school. And so I didn't get kicked out of school. I'm like, see, I don't have a problem. And so eventually in October, I told my sponsors, like, look, this isn't working anymore. I need to go back out and drink. So I went back out and drank and stuff. And this was in 2001. And during Christmas break, I went to a treatment center out in Roanoke because I had nowhere else. The real reason, well, my friend thought I was going because, oh, she's ready to get sober. Real reason is I had nowhere to live. Stay in the treatment center for a while. You know, Christmas break is 28 days. Treatment center is 28 days. Works perfect. So I went out there in Roanoke, and she drove me, and I stayed there for about 18 days and hitchhiked back and then kept on drinking. And then my last drunk was January 21st, 2002. And it wasn't, well, that was actually my last drink. My last drunk was the day before. And it wasn't anything spectacular, you know. You know, it was a regular day at McAdoo's with screwdrivers, a dollar, you know, nothing big or anything, you know. And, but it was the feeling I had that next morning that when I woke up shaking, not knowing what, you know, again, what happened, where I was, you know, I was definitely a blackout drinker a lot. Trying to go to my psychology class. Abnormal psychology at that, and trying to sit there and take notes and just can't hold my pen still because I'm shaking so bad. And, you know, just looking around because people are watching me because that's how important I am. And, you know, thinking everything's looking at me and the professor's talking right at me and everybody knows it. And so I left class because, you know, you can't handle with that. And so I left class and broke down in the hallway. And, yeah, it's really hard to explain that. And I know that being an alcoholic, people understand that you were just so, that I never wanted to look at alcohol again. But I did not know how to stay away from it. There was many times that I didn't want to drink again, but then, I found myself drinking again. And all I could remember is, you know, going at that Tucker's place was the best start I had. Well, from here, well, no, not here. Forgot, out of Richmond. from Farmville to Richmond was about an hour and 15 minutes, I guess if you drive fast like I do. And so I was shaking so bad I took a shot of liquor, and then I did the worst thing that I could ever do, probably, but on the other side, the best thing, I poured out the liquor bottle. It was very hard, but it was so hard, it was so much that I didn't want to get drunk, that I was willing to do anything. And so I only took a couple shots of liquor, just to get me, you know, to the place. And so I showed up to Tucker's, and the next day I woke up, had a seizure induced by alcohol, and went pulseless and shocked me, and hey, I'm back. Here I am. And so I was having some other consequences going on, and I don't remember much. I remember not feeling good at all and dosed up on a lot of drugs that were prescribed. Okay. So then I got out on a Friday, and I remember the Jaywalkers meeting, and I went to Jaywalkers, and I met a woman that lived in Buckingham, which helped. And she's like, are you done? And I was like, I'm done. And so she became my sponsor for a short time until I messed that up. And because I just mess things up. That's the way I do it. And then I met another woman there that had graduated from Longwood, and she was younger, like me. And she introduced herself, and we talked a little bit, and she took me to a meeting on Saturday night, which then became my home group, which was a good meeting. It had a lot of young people, because I had this whole delusion of, you know, I'm young, so we can't get sober. It's not in us. And then I walked in this meeting, there was a bunch of young people, and I was like, ah, man, that theory down the drain. and then that month, Sunday night, I went back to Longwood and went back to school. So where I had been surrounded by AA all this time, the first time, I couldn't stay sober. But now that I am back in the mix of Longwood and, you know, driving 30, 45 minutes to an hour just to go to a meeting, because I was desperate. I was done. I was willing to do whatever it took to not drink again. So I drove to meetings in Dillwyn and Buckingham and Cumberland, and I don't know, had it all set out. There was one meeting a night, and you know, and I drove there. I, you know, stopped doing a lot of my commitments at school, and I think they were all glad. And you know, because I knew this is what I had to do. So if you're new, I suggest talking to your sponsor. I was like a couple months sober or whatever, and then I went 3 weeks without talking to her, and I called her up one day, hey, let me tell you what happened. And, you know, and she's like, oh, sweet, did you call your sponsor and tell her? Huh, I thought you were my sponsor, you know. I'm like, I don't understand. She's like, well, you haven't called me in 3 weeks. So apparently you're supposed to call your sponsor. And so I learned that, and I also learned that going without a sponsor is not cool at all, and because I did that for a while, too. And so finally I got a sponsor, and I was getting ready to get out of school, which I was happy about. And I love hearing when people say that, you know, you shouldn't have any big changes in that first year. Let's see. I moved to Virginia Beach to do my internship. Came back 10 months later to Richmond to do another internship. Graduated, got a place to stay. Yeah, I went to Italy to see my parents. You know, I just like had all these things going on, and you know what? I'm still sober today, and because it was all about my willingness to stay sober. It was all about, you know, I have gone to hell, and I want to come back. I want to stay sober and really try to do this. And even, you know, having hard days in sobriety, okay, that's fine. I'll talk to my sponsor, I'll talk to, you know, friends, and I've learned that I can get through this, you know. And it's not as bad. It's like either that or drink and die. Take your pick, you know. I've been in treatment centers. I've been to jail a few times. Death was next. It's like, which choice, you know. And which is one of the things I like about my home group now is that we're very serious about AA because, oh, it's on the matter of life and death. And it's kind of like, oh, if you put it in that way, you know, I kind of see things a little different now. And so I asked this woman to be my sponsor, and I had a bunch of crap going on already, you know. 2 months after I had gotten sober, I went on this trip down to Atlanta, Georgia. Wait, where'd I go? Somewhere in Georgia. I don't know. I was 2 months sober. Who knows? But we did this Habitat project because, yeah, I'm all about giving and stuff, you know, because it makes me look good. Now I do Habitat because I enjoy it. But back then it was a different story. It's all about your motives. And so I went down there and had an accident down there and had a little head injury problem. And so I'm coming to this new sponsor with all these other issues and alcohol. And so she started taking me through the steps. And this woman is a saint. She is awesome. She's not my sponsor today, but she's still a very good friend. But just to spend an hour with me, I'm sure we're all bad, you know, when it was sober, but I just thought I was worse. I'm worse than you. Because once again, that's in my mind. And but she put up with me. And went through the steps, and I was so willing that when I was in Virginia Beach in the summer, I would get off Fridays, drive all the way up to Richmond from Virginia Beach, go to Jay Walker's that night, stay at her house, Saturday night go to my home group, Sunday go with the steps through her and just talking through her with the whole weekend, and then Sunday night drive all the way back down to Virginia Beach, and I did that for 10 months. Why? Because I wanted to stay sober. And I didn't know what else to do. You know, she said, call me every night. And you know I already have a problem calling on the phone. So calling every night was hard. But I did it because I wanted to stay sober. And I didn't know what else to do. And when I was new, you know, my first year and a half of sobriety was a big confusion mess. Because all I did was what people told me to do. And that's what I was told. You don't know anything. You don't know how to stay sober, do you? No, I don't. Okay, then shut up and listen to me. Okay, I will. You know? and so I kept on going to meetings in Virginia Beach. So those are cool meetings down there, by the way. And finally moved back up to Richmond and did my other internship and got this apartment that I'm so happy about. Because I was saving my money during the summer. And I got this apartment. It was a little studio apartment where the bed came out of the wall. And I didn't have electricity, so I used candles. Well, let me tell you, in the winter, it might not snow in Richmond, but it gets really cold. So I had friends that would, like, give me blankets so I wouldn't freeze to death at night. And I think even some nights, like, a friend of mine was like, you need to come up here. Okay? It's way too cold. But I was so excited because this apartment was so, it was mine. I mean, like, I earned this apartment. I was all excited about it. You know, I had lived in my car for a while. I lived in this camp, in this wooded area behind my counselor's office for a while. You know, so getting an apartment was so, it's like the small things of life. I was so excited. And eventually I got electricity, though, by the way. And so I finally graduated from one college. And it's like saying I'm still in college. But I did take a few years off. Which is just another amazement, you know. I mean, I graduated from college. It just amazes me, you know. I don't even know half the classes I took in college, and I still pass them, and I don't even know how that happens. So I didn't stay in that field too long because I really wasn't sure what I was doing that much, which was probably good for the patients. So I was going through the steps, and I know, I was talking to a friend a few months ago, and stay with me. I'm way off topic a lot of times. But I was talking to a friend of mine a few months ago after I had spoken, and she had told me, why do you always talk about the steps? And I was like, because that's what I know. I mean, you know, that's what I was taught in AA, and that's how it keeps me sober every day. And so I'm going to go ahead and talk about the steps. When my sponsor took me through the book, she started with the very front cover. And I never thought we could spend so much time on the very front cover. But we spent 2 hours on that cover. And, you know, half of it, I don't know what she said, but, you know, it's cool. We kept on going. And we went page by page, word for word, and we talked. And, you know, we didn't dissect every word. That would have been 3 years later. But we did talk, you know, say every word. And she had a dictionary and then the big book. And any time I ever asked a question, so after a while I just stopped asking. And any time I had a question like, hey, what's that word mean? She'd be like, oh, it's a dictionary. Look it up. And so, you know, it was very thorough, and that's what I needed then, is to be very thorough and to go through the big book. And my first step, I understood that I was powerless over alcohol. I understood that I could not control my alcohol drinking, my alcoholism. But the manageability part, even though all this happened, I still didn't quite get that part. And so she had me write up this list of everything. And I was like, good God, whose life is that? You know, thinking in my head, because I've learned after a while, don't say everything you're thinking. And so, you know, I looked in there and I was like, wow, I'm crazy. And so the first step was very hard. It took me a while. And then we moved on to the second step. And I grew up Catholic, so the whole God thing was not cool to me. And I didn't, I left the church when I was like 12 and stuff after confirmation. I had enough of that. And so the God thing was very hard for me, being willing. But you know, my sponsor told me, especially with second, third step, is as long as I'm willing to believe that I'm not in charge, then that's all we need right now. Because I wasn't going to get to that point right there and then that I believe in God. But she said, as long as you believe that you're not in charge of your life, then we'll start there. And I prayed about it a lot. And, you know, eventually I've been able to realize that there is a higher power and it's not me. And I choose to call him God today. And so we did the third step prayer on our knees, holding hands, which I thought was dumb. But then I started crying. So then I'm like, great, what kind of program is this? Because I'm not a crier, okay? And so, you know, and then we were kneeling down. And then we sat up in the chair. And as soon as we did that, she's like, okay, get out pen and paper. Huh? Big confusion. So we went to the fourth step, and we were working on that, and that was very hard for me because it wasn't so much I didn't want to write it down. It was like I didn't want to tell anybody because I learned in my family that what happens to you, you come talk to family about it. It stays there. And so telling somebody that I only known a year, because, you know, that's not long enough to know them too well, was very hard for me. So, you know, I pushed it off a lot. And then I got to the fifth step, and I did my fifth step. And I did, like, two small resentments in 3 hours. And apparently that's not good. And there was a lot of, like, I'm leaving. And I'd walk out of the room and slam the door and walk down the, you know, street and stuff and come back, walk in the house. And there's my sponsor, peaceful, sitting on the couch, and says, are you ready? I'm like, what is wrong with you? So after doing that a couple times, she was like, you know what, I think we need to go talk to my sponsor. And her sponsor terrified me. I was scared to death of her sponsor. And she tells me, because now she's my sponsor, she's like, because you had me up here. You didn't have me with you. You thought I was up here, and I'm right here with you. Just trying to stay sober one day at a time. And, you know, she talked very simple to me and very plain, and it helped so much. And she told me about my inventory, is that this is all the crap in your past. Do you want to be this in the past? Do you want to be your past? And I was like, no. Then just tell me what it is so we can pray about it and move on. And I was like, oh, okay. So I did all my inventory in like 8 hours. And that was even with a trip to Taco Bell. And so got that out of the way. And after that, she asked, she was like, so how do you feel now? I'm like, I feel like crap. And she's like, okay, well, go do your 6th and 7th step upstairs in my house. And so I did that. And then, whoop. And then she said, you know, how do you feel now? And I felt like, what's next? Because before this, I was always like, what's next? Because I don't want to do it. I want to be prepared. And now I was like, what's next? I'm ready. You know, I just want to tackle this. It was about a year and a half sober. And some of my behaviors I stopped doing. I stopped going to bars with friends. I haven't been shot at since I was a year and a half sober. So I think, you know, the progression of going through the steps has really helped me in my life, too. And so things are, you know, starting to get better and stuff. And so, you know, we went through the 8th and 9th step and, you know, did amends and, you know, I definitely had some amends that, you know, I just finished my last amends, like 2 weeks ago. And this was from my original amends list. Because there's two down there that I was like, I'm not doing this. You forget about it. I'm not doing this. And, you know, through prayer of 5 years of prayer and being willing, and I think maybe growing through the program, I finally finished those amends, and I just It's amazing to me. I just feel so great now, you know? And so we did the men's, and 10th step, my sponsor does with, you get a 10th step buddy. Kind of helps you learn about the 10th step, and also kind of helps you be accountable until you're, you know, able to do it on your own and stuff. And be ready to do your 10th step and know when you're supposed to call somebody. And, you know, that was really helpful, you know, having a guide. And, you know, that's what my sponsor is a guide. You know, she's not there to tell me, you know, how, in so many words, to run my life. But how she runs her life, you know, how she lives her life through the program and how she would suggest me living, you know, doing certain things and stuff. And it's also kind of a backboard, because I get a lot of great ideas, let me tell you. Then when I announce them to my sponsor, they're not so great anymore, you know? I have this one great idea. I want a motorcycle. And if anybody has a motorcycle, I want to talk to you after me. Okay. And so I tell my sponsor. Now, mind you, I've had a head injury 5 years ago that I just had my last brain surgery. February of last year, I think it was. And that was my 5th one. So when I tell my sponsor that I want a motorcycle, the first thought in her head is like, no, there's not a big enough helmet to help you. And so, which is funny because I work in MCV right now, and I work in the ER a lot, and we have, you know, people come in with motorcycle accidents all the time, and all my friends at work know that I want a motorcycle, and they're like, come here and look at this. And but through talking to people and talking to my sponsor, those crazy ideas that I get in my head slowly fades away. And so I've thought them through, prayed about them, and looked at them, and, you know, have really come to a decision on them. And that's only through A, because I am definitely, whoop, idea, okay, let's go, you know? Let's go do it, you know? I'm just very spontaneous, and just, I don't think about anything. I just think about doing it. came to 11th step, which had meditation, which I didn't like, because then you have to sit. After you pray, I have to sit, and I have to try to clear my mind and listen to what God is going to have for me to do, just be clear. And I came in the program very fidgety, and I would shake all the time, and not just because I was coming off alcohol, I was just... You know, I used to have a Gatorade bottle and, like, rip it all to pieces after I drank the whole thing and put it in the bag and then start playing with it. And, you know, people politely look at me like, look up. Okay, you know. So 11th step has really helped me not only to sit still when I'm praying, but also to sit still in meetings and to sit still when I'm around other people and just in general, and really helped me be at peace more inside, which... Being at peace inside has helped me be at peace outside. And that took a few years, too. and then the 12th step. I've had, you know, when I came to the 12th step, I thought the 12th step was only helping other alcoholics as far as sponsoring them. And I was like, well, this is going to be hard. Because, first of all, low self-esteem. Nobody's going to ask me to sponsor. And... Because, you know, that's the way my head works. But what my sponsor said, you know, helping another alcoholic. That doesn't mean just sponsoring them. That means being a service when you're asked to do something. You know? You know, my sponsor is like, don't say no to an AA, you know, request. Unless there is a very good reason. Like, you're out of town or deathly ill. And, which was pretty clear. Okay, got it. And, I mean, I've even taken off work before to, go do something that I was asked to do. Because that's how much it means to me to be sober. And when I am giving to other people, then I'm not thinking about myself. And I'm definitely not thinking of there, which we know is crazy. And, so it is, you know, just cleaning, you know, the carpet Like, we have a carpet cleaner, but sometimes they don't show up after our meeting. So, you know, to help clean the carpet of carpet stain, you know, coffee stains, you know. Just, you know, we have some of the weirdest jobs at our home group. But it's cool because everybody in our home group has a job. And that is keeping us sober when we have a commitment. And when I know that I have a commitment, you know, it just makes me, because I'm all about how you look at me. And if I fail that commitment, then that looks bad on me. So now I have to fulfill this commitment. So, you know, it's crazy up there, but I'm still sober today, so I guess something's working. But the first time I had a chance to sponsor somebody, I flipped out. I called my sponsor and was like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to mess them up, and they're going to go drink. And she politely reminded me that, did your sponsor make you go drink when you drank relapse? At first I want to say yes, but no, I was like, no. And, you know, it was all about praying and share your experience. You know, my sponsor's husband tells me, you know, before I go speak, he's like, hey, tell the truth. And, you know, if I find that if I'm telling the truth and I'm speaking from the heart and speaking, you know, from God, that usually the truth comes out, and usually it works. And so I've had a chance to sponsor other women since then, since that crazy moment. And taking people, you know, and when you're sponsoring somebody, whew, that'll keep you sober. When you got to hear their crazy stuff, and you're like, okay, I don't want to do that. It just makes me feel a little bit more like, okay, you have to, you know, that's crazy. Let me act a little bit different because I am sober now, you know. I don't have to do those crazy things anymore. And they get to remind me of those stuff that I would think of. I'd be like, oh, I thought about that, you know. And so being in service and, you know, speaking and sponsoring people and being a greeter has just been a big help. You know, helping at the district level, I had the chance to, you know, be the corrections chairperson of our district, you know, which is, you know, any service work, you know, it's like the service unit and AA and stuff. If I'm working my program and I'm, you know, being in AA with the fellowship and I'm doing service work, then, you know, I have a good chance of staying sober. And so that's what I try to remember. That's why I keep... it's actually written in my big book, you know, to do those things and I will stay sober. I mean, I have other things to keep me sober, you know, like praying and talk to my sponsor and stuff like that. But definitely service work has been very helpful. Some things that are going on today that's been great. Still in college, like I said. Now I'm in respiratory and I enjoy it a lot. Not bragging, but I used to get like D's. Now I have straight A's, so I'm very excited about that, because that doesn't happen. you know, I have a relationship with my niece and nephew and my brother, which is great. I get to talk to them, you know, at least once a month, maybe twice a month. You know, I didn't have the best relationship. I don't really have a relationship with my parents quite yet. I talk to my mother on an occasional once every 5 months basis. But that's progress, because when I first got in the program, my father took a knife and tried to stab me. So I think we're making progress, because, you know, it's all about how you look at it, you know. And he'll at least say hello. So, on the phone, of course, we keep distance, and, you know. But what I've learned from that is, you know, I am free of what has happened in the past. Whatever happens now, I know I have a program to help me get through those. And I know that I can't control everybody, just like they couldn't control me. And they might have their own difficulties, and I can't get bothered up by those. Because then I just get all crazy in the head, think it's my fault, and we're off to a running horse here. some other good things that happened in this program that I've really learned. And I have a... what kind of apartment do I have? I have a one-bedroom apartment. I have electricity. The AC's on. I have two beautiful kitty cats that are going to be two in September. And very healthy little babies. That's why I call them little babies. And so, you know, I got the AC running right now. I'm not even there. And I can afford it. And the first time I got that apartment, I turned all the lights on just because I thought it was exciting. So, anyways, so there's two big things that really happen in my sobriety that it kind of like, it's like, it starts off very rocky and it's horrible, and I thought it was an AA to stay sober, and this sucks. And, but through prayer and through this program, I have learned so much about myself and other people, have learned to trust people, and it has really been, you know, what's that little thing? Lemon, lemonade, something bad to good, whatever. You get my drift. So when I, you know, that head injury, and at one point I had this surgery a few years ago, and it kind of took me out of the running for a while, and I had to learn how to trust people and get rides from people, and did a lot of inventory on it, and through a lot of inventory, you know, I have learned that I really have friends here. I really have friends that I can call on in AA that aren't just because, you know, I don't talk very well, you know, because I look a little deformed, you know, on one side. You know, I had lost feeling on one side, and my speech was very bad. And, you know, they didn't care, you know. It's like, so what? We'll help you whether you get better or not. And I never knew what that meant. I never understood that before. And it was just good to see that they didn't leave just because, you know, we'd walk, we'd do a little walking to work on rehab, and I had a cane, and it was very hard for me. And, you know, I have friends that would joke with me, and I've learned that if you joke with me and maybe you like me and stuff, you know, that you're my friend. And, because before I thought you hated me if you joked on me and stuff. But they'd be like, come on, come on, we're coming, come on. And, you know, when I'd get to a certain point, they'd be like, throw their hands up and stuff like this, you know. And, but it was all in fun. You know, I was trying to make light of the situation that was, at my thoughts, was horrible, that I hated. And to make me feel better, you know, knowing that they're there to help me. And no matter how slow I walked, how long it took me to say hello or anything like that, that they were going to stay there with me. And that meant a lot to me. And the last thing, when I was in 2001, when I was trying to get sober and stay sober there, one of the big things that really drove me to drink, go back out and drink, was 9/11. And, you know, I don't use it as an excuse, but I use it as a point of when I'm not spiritually fit and sober, then I can't handle stuff. I just am not capable of handling stuff. So, you know, whether it was I failed a test or I had experience like that, I probably would have still went back out and got drunk. But what I've learned today over the past few years is that no matter when those times get bad, you know, I've done a lot of inventory on this too, and I have learned that... learned I'm sensitive. but I have learned that no matter how hard things get in life in AA, at least I have a program that I can come and talk and get through those things. Every September since, I have had nightmares. I was a paramedic firefighter, and we got called up the day after to go to D.C. for search and rescue. And that's probably the most difficult thing I've ever done. And a lot of it was hard because you don't realize that, you know, you're trying to help and it looks like a situation that you can't help. And one of the things that I've got to learn in the program is that just because the way I think and the way I see things might not always be the truth. Just because I don't think I'm helping, whether it's up there or whether it's in here, doesn't mean that God has a, you know, that plan. God might have a plan that I was helpful up there, like I can be helpful in AA. And I didn't understand that for the longest time. So, you know, every September, you know, it was just full of nightmares and sleeping, you know, just, you know, call my sponsor late at night and be like, this sucks, and, you know, and I've seen the program work in this, you know, all aspects. When it says in the book, all aspects of our life, I see it work here too, because, you know, every year has gotten a little bit easier to deal with. And that's been because of AA, and I haven't had a drink because of it. So I know, you know, no matter what happens, and I pray that in the future, whatever happens, that as long as I'm in AA and with God, that I'll be okay. Thanks.